Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. By the way, be sure and drop us a note or, and this is new, send us a short audio clip telling us what's on your mind, what's going on for the summer, your favorite vacation story, that kind of thing. Just use a smartphone or a digital recorder and send the file, or just a note if you'd rather, to our email address at indianaweekend@gmail.com. This is a great time of year to be down on the farm. Some farms, anyway. Think of the corn mazes, hay rides, apple orchards, the fun places to visit during the fall. For many families living in the city or the suburbs, this is the time to pick some apples or pumpkins, fresh fruit or cider. At Tuttle Orchards, northwest of Greenfield, the slogan is "Growing quality, harvesting memories." Tom Roney, grandson of the founder of Tuttle Orchards, took a break the other day to talk with us. Where are we in terms of the apple season? Are the different varieties ripen at different times?
Of the 20 varieties we have, we start picking apples usually right around the 4th of July, maybe a little earlier, and that's transparent or low-dye apples, which is an applesauce apple, the ones, yellow apples that get ripe real early. And then for us, it's about 3 weeks before we get another variety. And those are Early Blaze, which is a red apple, tart apple, but it's a good eating apple, or you can bake with it or cook with it. And then from that point, then there's apples getting ripe, different varieties getting ripe virtually continuously from that point on.
Mid-September, late September, what are your...
There's probably in Indiana 100 different varieties of apples raised in one orchard or another. So there's just a continuum of apples getting ripe clear up until really the 1st of November. A lot of your late varieties that are popular now, like Fuji and Granny Smith, some of those are very late. They don't get ripe really until late October into November, and as some years, if it's a real early fall, they never really get ripe. You can pick them, but they never achieve what they could have if they'd had a little more time to ripen on the tree.
You have a big operation here. Did I see that you produce something like 15,000 gallons of cider?
Could that be right? Well, typically our production here in apples is about 10 to 12,000 bushel of apples a year. In a normal year. Last year we picked 1,500 because of the freeze that we had.
It's like losing 90% of your crop,
yes,
huh?
Yeah, we lost, and the whole state lost that kind of thing, and the whole eastern part of the United States did. So this year is really a good crop. We've got plenty of apples of about every variety. And like I say, we'll pick about 10,000 bushel to 12,000, somewhere in there. This year, we sell virtually all of them. Probably 90% of our apples are sold right here on the farm, either through the market as fresh apples, or we make cider out of the ones that are not the top grade. And we'll make 12, probably 14,000 gallons of cider this year. We wholesale a little bit of that, or we think we're going to try to anyway, but we're almost to the limit of what we can make. Just the equipment that we use and tanks, we're just about at our limit of how much we can produce.
And so that sounds like an awful lot to me. 14,000 bushels, 12,000 gallons of cider. Yeah. Where would that put you in terms of, are you one of the largest?
Within the state. As far as how we are ranked, if you will, in the state, we're probably pretty average. There are a lot of retirement orchards, I'd say, where folks have retired and they put out 5 or 10 acres of trees, and that's going to be what they're going to do in retirement. There are a number of those kind of operations around.
Speaking as a financial analyst, do you recommend that?
Only if you really want to work, because growing fruit, any kind of fruit, is pretty much a year-round job. I mean, you don't just go out in the fall and the apples fall off in your hand. Because you got through the winter, virtually all through the winter, we're pruning trees. They have to be pruned every year. And then as soon as there's green tissue on that tree, you have to start spraying, primarily for diseases early on. But then from then on, clear up till this time of year, really, you're always watching for insect problems and disease problems and spraying appropriately. And so we'll end up spraying 12 times a year, if not more.
Do you ever get somebody walking by here and they go, you know what, I want one of these. I'm going to retire.
His orchards. No, not. Well, we have, I suppose, had some folks that have stopped in, you know, or at least I'm sure there are people that come and look around and think, wow, this has got to be a moneymaker. I need to get into this business. But the reality is it's a huge amount of work. Our whole family, we've got five, six of us, I think it is, that are actively involved right now. And most of us are putting in 12, 14 hours a day, 6 days a week. And you can do that year-round if you want to.
How many generations of y'all has this been?
We're on the fourth generation. As I say, my grandfather was the first, and then my parents. My mother was an only child, so she was the Tuttle. And then there's just my brother and I. I have never married, but my brother has seven kids. So that's the coming generation. And two of those kids would seem they're going to be sticking with it and be the next generation to run the orchard.
Tom Roney, grandson of the founder of Tuttle Orchards, northwest of Greenfield. It's one of those you-pick apple places with all kinds of apple products and fall events. It's a big stop for school tours. They're at TuttleOrchards.com.
Now, just to look at him, you'd say Johnny Appleseed never would make a pioneer. He was such a sawed-off, scrawny little fella. Of course, that didn't faze Johnny none. Shucks, he had his apple trees and the morning sun and the evening breeze.
The Lord is good to me, and so I thank the Lord for giving me the things I need, the sun and rain and an apple seed. Yes, he's been good to me.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Indiana is on Amber Nolan's list, but it may take a while. Amber, from upstate New York, is flying across the country. Actually, not just flying, but hitching rides on private aircraft. And not just across the country, but on a quest to visit all 50 states. She has just a few states left. Indiana and Illinois are still on her list. But lately, she's been hanging out in Seattle, trying to catch a ride to Alaska before everything gets too cold. That's where we caught her by phone the other day.
Well, for the last 14 months or so, I've been going around the U.S. Hitchhiking on private planes, which includes everything from Homebuilds, airplanes, Cessnas, Pipers, seaplanes, all the way up to private jets. And I'm trying to reach all 50 states by hitchhiking on airplanes.
Why would you do something like this? Although it sounds like fun. I have to say, I love flying.
Well, part of it, I've been doing travel writing for the last 7 years or so, and I've been all over the world and wanted to see what was in my own backyard. And, I thought of traditional ways of doing it, driving around the country, taking the train, the bus, and I wanted to do it from a unique perspective and kind of challenge myself to see if it was possible to do this. I had the idea to hitchhike on small planes, and I talked with some of the local pilots who really encouraged me to do it. They thought it was a cool idea, gave me some advice on people I could contact, and also told me a little bit about the aviation community, the general aviation community, and some of the problems they've been facing lately as, not as many young people are getting involved and costs are rising. So part of my project became not only seeing the 50 states and writing about it, but also to try and shed some light on their community as well and hopefully get people involved again.
What were some of the tips that they gave you that have proved to be helpful?
Well, they told me about some of the major organizations. The AOPA was the main one. They've been very, very
Aircraft
helpful.
Owners also, and Pilots Association? Yeah.
Aircraft Owners Pilots Association, yes, AOPA. Sorry, there goes a plane landing. One second. I'm almost right in front of the airport. And they also
sure that's not your ride.
No. They're coming in. It's tough right now because I'm trying to get to Alaska, and it's a little late in the year. But just also that the community is a really, really tight-knit group. There's, very friendly group of people. Everybody that works in the airports, the pilots, they have all kinds of barbecues and get-togethers. And it's just a really great, friendly, and helpful community. And, I think a lot of times these days that idea of community is lost a little bit. So it's kind of refreshing to go back a little bit and see people kind of helping each other out. That was part of it.
So how do you talk somebody into giving you a ride in their airplane?
Well, I just tell people what I'm doing. I go down and talk with people at the desk, at the airport. I have these jet hiking shirts on, so a lot of times people will see the shirt and say, what's up with your hitchhiking project here? And, I tell them I'm a journalist. I'm trying to get to all 50 states. At this point, I've been to 42. I think I've been on 81 planes, I've been doing this basically nonstop, and they all just think it's a cool adventure. I wish I did that when I was younger, what a fun time, and they really enjoy, I find, across the board, people want to get others involved in aviation. There's sort of a free-spirited, adventurous side to this side of the industry versus the commercial industry, I think, where It's a lot of fun. Flying actually is fun. It's we're flying low. We're doing aerobatic rolls sometimes, and the idea that you can just get in your plane and go. It's a passion for a lot of people. So I find that they want to get other people involved in it and want to show me how much fun it can be.
Have you gotten any lessons out of this? Any flying lessons?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of times I'll get to fly the plane a little bit. I'm learning all the kind of the pilot speak, if you will, because it's basically another language, I think. Seeing all these different types of aircraft, the takeoffs, the landings, everything, and you really pick up some things along the way. I don't have my license yet. I have to sit down and do ground training. And to do that, I have to be in one place for more than like 3 days at a time, I think. I plan on getting my license when this is finished because it's a little bit addicting.
Hey, Amber, do you have any Indiana connection?
There's been a few people that have contacted me from there. I have not been to Indiana yet. I have. I lie. We touched down at one of the airports on the way to Oshkosh Air Venture, but just to fuel up for a quick break. And I'm only counting the states if I actually leave the airport and go exploring because I think on the ground and getting out there and meeting people and seeing what each state has to offer is a big part of this as well. So I do have a few, but hey, I can always use more.
Any surprises in the states that you've been to, the places that you've been to where you thought, wow, I'd like to go back there?
Yeah, actually, the funny thing is I find something interesting and wonderful about each place that I go to. Even sometimes the locals will tell me, oh, what are you going to do here? There's nothing to do here. And then I end up finding something awesome. And so I guess it depends on which place I've been to. But, I have favorites for sure. I loved Montana. Glacier National Park is just, it's absolutely spectacular. Louisiana the people were great. The food and the culture. And, of course, New Orleans was wonderful.
Some interesting people in New Orleans, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We met a voodoo priestess down there. I say we because the pilot I was staying with, actually, Erin, she wanted to get her plane blessed by a voodoo priestess, and so she talked her into doing so, and the woman came out and spit gin on her airplane and waved a stick.
Did you say spit gin?
She spit gin on the plane, and this is the strangest story, I'm sorry, and then was waving sort of like incense called evil away, and then The only reason why she would do it was there and said, oh, I'll take you up for a ride in the plane. That was the one stipulation. She blessed the plane, but the voodoo priestess wanted to go for an airplane ride.
You were already a travel writer, an experienced traveler. What have you learned in doing this?
Just the idea that, overall, as much negative news that we hear these days, that people are really just good people at heart. People still want to help each other out. And that to me is just, that's invaluable information. But also that, you know, you can travel the world and take it a little slower. You don't have to rush and go on, you know, a 2-day whirlwind vacation and see all these crazy tourist attractions. A lot of it is just talking with people in each place and getting a feel for their culture. And each state has it's like a different country. It has a culture of its own. But I think a big part of traveling is kind of the difference between vacationing, where you're just, you know, going to see the 2 tourist attractions and get back on the plane and go home, and really try and learn and absorb something from, you know, the area that you visit.
Amber Nolan calls herself the Jet Hiking Gypsy, a veteran travel writer trying to hitchhike her way to all 50 states on airplanes. She started in July 2012, and Indiana is one of the final 8 states she's trying to get to. Well, Indiana and Alaska and Hawaii. But in the meantime, if you like, you can keep up with her via Twitter at Jet Hiking or her blog, jethiking.com.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
You know, this is a great time of the year to get out in the country to one of those farms open to visitors where fall arrives under the sun-dappled leaves of the apple trees. Pumpkins will soon be ready to pick. The hayride is about to leave. We have a list of apple orchards on our Facebook page. To celebrate the start of fall, we visited with the folks at Tuttle Orchards and met Tom Roney.
My grandfather, Roy Tuttle, started the business back in 1928 as far as planting apples. The farm's been here longer than that, but he decided he was going to get in the apple business and so started planting trees, and we've added to it over the years and taken away from it, taken old trees out. So he passed away in 1960, so my dad helped work at it then, although he was a real mail carrier. So I started working up here when I was about 10 years old, driving the tractor to spray and doing some things like that through the summertime.
Driving a tractor at age 10?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that was very common. Well, still common for farm kids to be driving the tractor at 10. That's not a big deal.
You went to Purdue to study
agriculture,
didn't
you? Yeah. I'm a Purdue graduate, but in horticulture. So that's been a real big help. My brother and I both are. My brother and I manage the business now.
Are they still coming up with new varieties of apples?
Yes, there's new varieties being developed on an ongoing basis. Apples are cross-pollinated. In other words, you can't plant the seed from a Red Delicious apple. Well, you can plant it, but you won't get Red Delicious like the original because the bees cross-pollinate the flowers. And in fact, Mother Nature set it up where they will not self-pollinate. So that's why you got to have 2 trees for most fruit trees. So yeah, there's new ones being developed. There's actually a Midwest Apple Improvement Association that's made up of and started by folks here in Indiana and Ohio. And they have released a new variety here just in the last year, I guess it was. And I'm trying to think what the variety. It's something Evercrisp, I think, is what it's called. And so it's being propagated now by the nursery. It has to be propagated through grafting. You can't take the seed and plant them. So you have to graft new trees or bud new trees from the original. There's only one original tree, and it happens to be at Dowd Orchards up in north of Peru. They've been in the business for well over 100 years up there.
Indiana has a pretty good tradition of apple. I mean, I think of John Chapman for one.
Oh, right. Yes, Indiana has a long history of apples because, as you were saying, John Chapman came as far as Indiana and Illinois. His burial is up at Fort Wayne, Indiana. And there's still one or two original, at least we think, trees that he planted. But yeah, there's a long tradition here. The settlers brought apples from Europe when they come across. So there's been apples here since the founding folks. And some of those varieties were varieties that they grew in England and France. And some of those are still around, but the majority of what we have here now are, if you will, native to the United States. To get a new variety, you planted seed, or seed was planted by the birds or whatever, and when that tree grew up and started to bear fruit, if it bore fruit at all, because sometimes they won't, but if the fruit that it bore, then you look at that, and if you think that's better than other things you got, or it's different and you like it, then I got a new variety. I'm going to call it Tom, and then you can continue to propagate that tree. Again, it has
by
to be done by grafting. And so we, in fact, Tuttle Orchards holds a patent to a specific variety of stamen wine sap apples. And it originated here, a single tree, and we sold the patent rights to it to Stark Brothers Nursery, which is over in Louisiana, Missouri. And so they then propagated the tree commercially, and now those trees are all over the world. But you can trace them all back to one tree here on this farm.
And it came about just because of a happenstance
chance. Yeah, we're not really sure whether it was a seedling, was a sprout coming up off a root, or just what it was. And you can actually have one bud on an existing tree to mutate, and you end up with something different. A lot of times that's how you get different apples that are redder or whatever. They'll just be a mutation in the genetics of that one bud. And so the apples that come off of that bud and off of the limb it produces will look different.
Tom Roney, whose family owns Tuttle Orchards near Greenfield. We have a list of apple orchards around the state on our Facebook page. I can tell you that just spending an hour or two at one and buying a bag of apples and quart of cider really puts you in a great fall mood. It's good to see those fall sights, but saying goodbye to summer isn't easy. The other night, one of the last nights of the season, the dog and I walked outside. He stopped and listened, and then I was listening, realized I hadn't really been listening before. Sound has a way of reminding you things you didn't realize you had forgotten. The night sounds of summer, sound of all those years. Now, this time of year, the nights get a little quieter, in just a few weeks till Halloween. The smell of pumpkins and turning leaves. Soon, the fall of winter nights, till the seasons change too fast again and the summer song returns. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or just want to say hi. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.